welcome Christina to London Retreats again. As many of you will know, Christina is a co-founder of Dyer House in Devon. She has also just become an executive board member of the IMS in Massachusetts, as well as being a guiding teacher there. She has taught meditation retreats for over 30 years and has written also many books on Buddhism and meditation. And we are very, very pleased to have you with us again. Thank you.
So I would also very much join in welcoming you to this day of practice and silence. It's truly delightful to see how these retreat days in London have so grown over the years. And, you know, it's due to all of those who so graciously volunteer themselves to do all the work. And, of course, it's also due to all of you who are willing to come and practice here. And I think there is something quite lovely about creating or bringing into being this oasis of calm, this oasis of collectedness in the middle of the city. It's a rare and precious opportunity for us all just to have a very dedicated day, a day that's dedicated to well-being, to understanding, to depth, to compassion. So to begin that day, I would really encourage all of you just to really have that sense of stopping inwardly, of being able to breathe out. No matter how full or how busy your life is just now, to really commit yourself to being here fully for this day. Taking this time to nurture, really to nurture our own capacity for mindfulness and balance. The Buddha said so many times that all wise attention, all wise practice, all wise understanding really follows on the heels of wise intention. And my sense is that to do a day-long retreat really asks for as much clear intention as a person who's beginning a year-long retreat. To really have that sense of being wholehearted inwardly, of creating for yourself a dedicated space. I think it really only takes just a little reflection for us all to acknowledge how very many lost moments there can be in our lives. Moments that we neglect or overlook or even dismiss as being somehow unworthy of our attention or lost simply because of the busyness of our own minds. I think it is so easy to forget that the foundation of deep understanding and the foundation of a liberated heart really begins with the commitment to leave no moment unattended, but to deeply care for the quality of our heart, the quality of our mind, and how we are present in our world. Sometimes it's said, do not think that these small moments of agitation or discontent or unmindfulness do not matter, that it only takes a single spark to set a mountain on fire. Also, do not think that these small moments of attention and mindfulness and dedication do not matter, that the great oceans are really filled drop by drop. So today I'd like to reflect in the retreat on this noble quality of equanimity. In this tradition, it is one of the paramis, the noble qualities of the heart. And I think there's always something appropriate in reflecting upon equanimity. The only other time I taught a day long on equanimity was last year in New York. And we have the retreats in New York in Manhattan in the middle of the Garment District. And on a Saturday. And everybody does their walking meditation on the street. There isn't anywhere else to do it. So, you know, we sit and then we send everybody out to walk on the streets in the middle of this huge street market with all these vendors trying to hawk things and sell you something and yelling and shouting and taxis honking. So it's always a very good place to practice equanimity. And the center in New York had not been long open, and they had not yet discovered that the adjoining loft had been rented out to a singing studio. So we got there to reflect upon equanimity, and someone had turned up for their lesson, a curiously untrained voice. And for the entire 45 minutes, this woman was practicing scales. So she went, and then her voice went crack. And as the sitting went on, you could feel the temperature in the hall rising as we were all sort of collectively willing this woman to make that top note, you know. But it was also quite curious to see the way that equanimity just seemed to disappear so fast. But it was also Christmas time. So there was not only the streets, there was this kind of collective consciousness, you know, where society or, you know, the economic culture was trying to convince everybody they could make themselves happy by buying more. So it was a very interesting day to practice equanimity. It was quite stark. Our life and not always our practice is not always filled with so many extreme moments, but I think when we reflect on how our world is right now and how we are in that world, we probably see the very urgent need for us to really find that place of equanimity within ourselves. Living in a world which is so scarred by so much tragedy, by so much violence, by so many powerful views and opinions, by so many fors and so much against. Living in a culture which often feels increasingly kind of threaded with fear and the encouragement to be afraid, the encouragement to be suspicious and mistrustful. Living in such a divided world outwardly, we often wonder how we can respond with compassion, with balance, with clarity, how any of us really makes a difference. And I think probably the first step towards making any difference at all is that we do find the ability to step out of this collective consciousness of anger and fear. That if we are going to actually be able to bring any element of compassion, of healing, of understanding, we surely, each one of us, needs to find that place in ourselves that is a refuge, that is a balance, that is a place of kindness and understanding, a place of commitment. And probably in our history of our world, there's always been some urgency for individuals to take upon themselves that responsibility. But I'm sure for many of us too, this also feels a time of urgency. And that is not a bad thing in practice. Sense of urgency is not a bad thing in practice. It is a reminder that, you know, we practice as if our life depends upon it. And in very real ways, it does. And we practice as if our world, the quality of our world, the healing of our world, depends upon it. And in a way, it does. And practicing with a sense of urgency is not practicing with ambitiousness. It's not practicing with intensity. It's not practicing in a way in which we set up countless goals for ourselves and strive to achieve them. But is it practicing as if every moment really does matter? and how we are in that moment really does matter. I think what we see over and over again in our lives is that our moods, our mental states, our emotions seem to be endlessly tied to the events in our life, inwardly and outwardly. We see too how our response to life and our response to events and people seems to be powerfully governed just by how we feel about them. If someone or something makes us feel good, we're happy. We like them. We want more of it. We want to stay close. If someone or something makes us feel bad, we're angry or we're irritated or we're judgmental. We try to create a distance. And if someone or something leaves us untouched, is neutral, mostly we ignore or dismiss them. In this essential paradigm of our lives, we see over and over again the places where we get knocked off balance. We can live our life governed just by those feelings, good, bad, indifferent. And that often means that we live our lives in a state of a kind of perpetual motion and restlessness, pursuing that which makes us feel good, avoiding that which makes us feel bad, spacing out and disconnecting of the face in the face of that which is neutral. And it is actually, this is where we cultivate equanimity. Within that motion, within that agitation, we are asked to cultivate a sense of poise and balance. Equanimity is not a state of disconnection or just detachment. In fact, equanimity is really not a state at all. But it is a discovery of an inner wisdom and steadfastness that is really not governed by the changing events of our life. It is very much a part of compassion that our ability to open to suffering without flinching relies upon the equanimity we have found within ourselves. Equanimity is not found by disconnecting from the world, by turning away from it, but by understanding that there is a way of being in which our heart is not governed or dominated. If you think of just a single day in your life, you get up in the morning, you breathe, you eat, there are tasks you attend to, there are sounds you like, there are sounds you don't like. There are people you love and people you struggle with. Our bodies continue to surprise us. A new ache appears and an old one disappears. Think of your mind in a single day. The countless thoughts, the countless memories and plans. Some of them are lovely and some of them are unlovely. And our minds do all the things a mind will do. Each day in our life, there might be moments when we visit heaven and moments when we visit hell, separated from things that we want to be close to and married to things we don't want. We can feel also very battered by change, fearful in the face of uncertainty. I might mention that in all of human history, no one has yet succeeded in having only the heavens. No one has yet succeeded in having only lovely, uplifting thoughts, wonderful colleagues, plans that work out perfectly, sounds and people that only delight us. And it's rather useful to acknowledge on quite a deep level that we are really not going to be the first. Because that somehow kind of settles us into this uncertain, changing world that we are asked to meet. Equanimity is certainly not found by turning away from the uncertain and the unpredictable or by trying to order and control our world. Equanimity is found by turning towards the uncertain and the unpredictable. In Zen, there's a saying that enlightenment is to be intimate with all things. Equanimity is also said the willingness to be equally near all things, without conditions. Now, Nagarjuna, one of the great Indian teachers, he said, what do you do with a life that doesn't go away? And the first step of equanimity, of course, is to stop wanting it to go away. To stop wanting it to go away. To stop pushing it away. And then we can begin, perhaps, to see that the seeds of wisdom, the seeds of liberation, actually lie within all that we feel is so chaotic and insecure and disturbing. Now, conventionally, I think in our culture, when we don't feel any balance inwardly, what we try to do is we try to control the uncontrollable. That when we don't feel any balance inwardly, no refuge inwardly, often our efforts are dedicated to trying to create an orderly life, a life that is actually determined to defy our wish for certainty. Other times we try desperately to fix that which can't be repaired, or to govern that which is ungovernable. And the result so often of all of that effort and striving is to live with anxiety. And I just think it's so useful to acknowledge that anxiety is the proximate cause of disconnection in our life. That when we're anxious about something, we become aversive. That when we're anxious about something, we try to disconnect, we try to distance ourselves from it. And that very process of disconnection is often where we lose equanimity. And we see this, and we perhaps really learn to nurture the seeds of balance. The seeds of balance within the uncertainty of our lives. And perhaps we learn to nurture the seeds of balance really within our own hearts. And this is a practice. You know, I have to say, this really is a practice. This is a journey. It's not like we wake up one morning and we look in the mirror and we see the face of the Buddha staring back at us and say, oh yeah, finally I got, you know, I'm there, I'm equanimous. This is a journey. It is a practice. It requires tremendous patience, requires tremendous interest and investigation. But it's really a question of, can we feel the pleasant and the delightful in this life without craving and clinging? Can we embrace the unpleasant and the difficult without fear and aversion? Can we stay close to that which is neutral without feeling bored or impatient? Can we embrace the reality of change and uncertainty with an unshakable heart? Can we learn deeply what it means to meet all the places in ourselves that are sticky, that we cling to, with great, great calm? It could be said that the whole of the path and the whole of the Buddha's teaching is actually held within the cultivation of this one parami of equanimity. The Buddha said, the world arises with contact, and the foolish pursue contact, and the wise seek to understand it. Now, contact is the meeting of the sense door, sensory information, and consciousness. There is the eye, the sight, and seeing. There is the ear, the sound, and hearing. There is the mind, the thought, thinking. There's the body, sensation, feeling. The tongue, the taste, tasting. Now these moments of contact, which are happening moment to moment, every single moment in our lives, these moments of contact are very crucial in understanding equanimity. Because we see that within contact there is feeling. It's pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Pleasant sounds, unpleasant sounds. Pleasant sights, unpleasant sights, neutral sights. Thoughts that are pleasant, thoughts that are unpleasant, thoughts that are neutral. There's no problem there. As long as that's going to be the same for a Buddha, it's going to be the same for a person who's never practiced in their life. There is always going to be the pleasant, the unpleasant, and the neutral. It's not a problem. What happens is that the pleasant gets hijacked by craving. The unpleasant gets hijacked by aversion or fear. And the neutral gets hijacked by delusion. Just the feeling that there's something missing, something incomplete, something wrong. Learning to tend to these moments of contact with wise attention is cutting that link between the feeling tone and the underlying tendency. So there can be the pleasant without craving. There can be the unpleasant without aversion or fear. There can be the neutral without disconnection. This is the place of mindfulness. This is the work of mindfulness. This is actually the liberation of mindfulness. Because when we see that when those feeling tones in all our perceptions are hijacked by those underlying tendencies, that's when we start running around our world like mad people, you know, pursuing the pleasant, avoiding the unpleasant, getting lost in the neutral. This is the place of mindfulness, is to really understand and to be close to these moments of contact, because this is where we find equanimity. Because it's not the pleasant or the unpleasant or the neutral that knocks us off balance. It's the craving and the pursuit. It's the fear and the aversion. It's the disconnection and the disassociation that knocks us off balance. So what I would really like us to do is actually to really focus on this today. It may seem like a big task, you know, it may seem like your mind is not clear enough, you know, you don't have enough concentration, you don't have enough of this, enough of that, but you do have lots of contact. I can guarantee it, you do have plenty of contact. And if you have the willingness to really pay attention, the willingness to really investigate those moments of contact, perhaps we can start to cultivate seeds of balance, of not pursuing, not avoiding, not being lost. I would say that this quality, this parami of equanimity, is not only about finding this inner unshakability in our own lives. The way that it is so valued in this tradition is that this parami of equanimity is integral to the fabric of compassion. For us to really have the steadiness to embrace sorrow, to embrace suffering in this life, we need to know what it means to find that ease and balance in our own hearts. For us to be open and upright in the face of suffering and loss and rage and fear, we need to find that ease and balance in our own hearts. To listen to the cries of the world without drowning in that ocean of sorrow, we need to find this quality of equanimity within our own heart. Okay, so we'll begin the day with a sitting. You might want to just stand up for a moment to stretch your body.